Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest today is Jolene DeRuiter. Jolene, I am falling over your name because I'm so excited to talk about this weird episode of Star Trek. Jolene, thank you for joining me.
Thank you, and don't worry about it. I actually occasionally misspell my own name because it's a mouthful, so okay.
Well, tell the people a little bit about yourself.
Well, I run a blog called The Everywhereist. It's everywhereist.com. And it used to be primarily a travel blog, which I started after I was laid off. And it was all about what happens when someone who's completely ill-suited to travel decides to write a travel blog. So it was all about my mishaps and the terrible things that happened to me when I was on the road. And I think people read it because it made themselves feel better about their own problems on the road. From that came a book that came out last year, which is called All Over the Place, Adventures in Travel, True Love, and Petty Theft. And let's see, after all of that, I started to kind of branch out away from the travel world. So now I'm writing about all sorts of stuff that interests me. Whether it be feminism or recipes, and today we're talking about Star Trek, so
yes.
I'm super excited about that.
And I should say, in the interest of full disclosure, although I don't know why I feel like there should be full disclosure, I came across your blog because of an intersection between feminism and a recipe. You have had, as of late, a blog post that's been making the rounds where you create or follow Mario Batali's very strange, in many ways, a cinnamon roll recipe that he shared after apologizing for sexual harassment accusations.
Yes. Yeah. He included a cinnamon roll recipe in his sexual misconduct apology letter. I made the recipe and wrote about it, and that kind of took off. And you were one of the people who contacted me. You were by far one of the more tangential and interesting introductions to happen as a result of that.
Yeah, I found the blog post, which I will link to, very amusing and kind of sad, I think was what you were going for. So it worked well. And then I, of course, clicked around on your website and I clicked on, the about page, and you list one of the things you're interested in as Star Trek. And I thought, OMG, I host a Star Trek podcast.
Well, this and is if Kismet. You do. If you do a search on my blog, actually for Star Trek, you will find a photo of my husband and I from several years ago. It might be close to 10 years ago, in which he is a red-shirted ensign, and I am dressed up as the joke was I was basically Girl Spock. I had the wig, I had the ears, I had the outfit, and I made those costumes by hand. So it was a pretty fun year.
Oh, well, there you go. See, this, I used to ask this question of kind of having a Star Trek fandom scale where one is you know nothing about Star Trek and 10 is you have dressed up as someone from Star Trek. So I think you're a 10, clearly.
Oh, well, and I hesitate to say that because I don't know all the deep Star Trek cuts. I'm not super up on the trivia. But I feel like that's always a bad litmus test for how much someone loves something. So
yes, because I feel like you can express your love in many ways. Some people express their love by obsessively studying it and knowing everything about it, and other people express their love by being surrounded, as I am, by Star Trek toys and various paraphernalia, or hand-making costumes. I think that's a pretty high on the list there, something I would not be able to do. So now we've established that you are a Star Trek fan, but which series would you say is your kind of your favorite series of Star Trek?
I mean, I grew up with Next Generation. Actually, that's not entirely true. I think when I was really small, I watched the original series, and I have kind of a special place in my heart for that. But Next Generation was kind of my I was an adolescent, early teenager. So that was really a kind of pivotal time in my life. And so that's the one that sticks in my psyche.
And that is also, we are of similar age. So it is, we have the same kind of Star Trek upbringing, that TNG is the one that, when I think of Star Trek, I think Captain Picard.
So do Riker. I.
And of course, I have fond feelings for all of the series, but the TNG is the one. So if you had to pick a favorite character from TNG, because someone, perhaps a podcast host, were asking you.
I mean, I actually really like Geordi. I think what I really appreciated about him is, you know, he's arguably one of the most important people on the ship, but anytime anything breaks, he's the one who actually has to manually climb in. And so it's this amazing thing where it's such a 90s mindset of, well, you know, like, we can't foresee the idea of fixing things on a computer or by typing it in. It's actually this, no, you've got to physically get in there and crawl in there. And so Geordi's like in the bowels of a ship. And I think a lot of times he's got like a flashlight in his mouth or he's holding a flashlight. And I'm like, it's hundreds of years in the future and we can't even get him a headlamp. So that, I don't know, for some reason, the absurdity of that and the fact that Geordi always just was kind of like, yeah, I'll do this again. I'll climb it. Sure, I'll go. It's fine. I'm incredibly important, but I will do this. I just found that so charming and awesome and like frustrating and annoying and fantastic. So I love Geordi so much. I think he's one of my favorites.
What we're not going to talk about, though, Riker or Geordi or any of our TNG friends, because you were randomly selected one of the rarest of things for someone who will be on Random Trek, and that is an original series episode. And even more rare is a third season original series episode, where I feel like they put some of the strangest original series episodes ended up in that final season. And I am thinking to myself, there were only three seasons because someone is going to be very angry at me, but I'm pretty sure the third season.
I think there were only three
seasons.
I think you're right. All right. And I had actually seen parts of this episode before.
I have no memory of this episode. That doesn't mean that I hadn't seen it before. And the episode that we are talking about, that you already know because it's in the title of the podcast you downloaded, is That Which Survives, which is the third season, 14th episode. And spoiler alert, according to Captain Kirk, That Which Survives is Beauty, apparently, at the end, which I found to be the strangest way to end this show.
So weird.
But we don't need to jump right at the end. But I was just like, that's an interesting thing to say, Captain Kirk. So, original series, what are your thoughts about it before we talk about this particular episode?
I think what's fascinating watching it, you know, the thing that you don't appreciate as much, at least that I didn't appreciate as a kid when I watched reruns of the original series in the 80s, and what I'm able to see with a lot more clarity now in 2018 is that, you know, in some ways the show was remarkably progressive. You've got this multicultural cast. You've got a multiracial cast. You've got a strong, intelligent Black woman in a major role, which was pretty damn unusual at the time. It's pretty much the height of the Cold War, and you've got a Russian character who's friends with the very American captain. And so there's all of these things that are very progressive for the time. But then you've got stuff that's so sexist or 60s, mm-hmm. and you're just like, oh gosh, this feels embarrassingly dated. So I noticed that's what really struck me a lot in this and I think that came through very strongly in this episode. Not to mention the fact that there is a character who I believe in this episode is supposed to be of East Indian descent on the bridge, and she's actually a Jewish woman wearing brown face.
Yeah, so, that's an unfortunate decision.
It was. And so there's the actress, I looked her up. I think her maiden name was Newman. I can't remember her married name, but she plays Lieutenant Manjula Radha, who I think is supposed to be East Indian. And like, I mean, you're watching it and you're like, oh no, no. Like, so it is, I would say that's what struck me as interesting. I also think there's something fascinating about just the clothing, and the clothing is always amazing, right? Mm-hmm. And the costuming, but how they spoke to one another is really fascinating. There is, you know, people are cutting, like the captain kind of cuts people down, and Spock is kind of a jerk.
Spock is a big jerk in this episode.
He is a huge jerk in this episode. Yeah.
I wrote down one of my notes. I wrote feisty Spock.
Yeah. Well, my husband was, as I was watching it, my husband was kind of, he was, you know, in the periphery, and he, you know, he just kind of poked his head in and he's like, Spock's a dick. I'm like, yeah, no, he's kind of being a dick.
Yeah. I feel like it's up to the writers must have been so excited to write for Spock, and they're like, he's logical, so we really must play that up and then have the Scotty Spock kind of tension that's not really tension, but it's just, it was weird.
Yeah.
I didn't understand it. But yeah, so I guess I'll quickly set up what this episode is about, and then we can just kind of hop around, because I'm not sure if I go through it like chronologically, but this episode, one of the things I've noticed about original series episodes is, well, this is not something I noticed, this is a fact. They're a 50-year-old TV show, and the pacing is quite different than modern TV shows.
True.
Not a lot of story fills up that 50 minutes.
No.
So the Enterprise comes across this wacky planet that doesn't seem like it's natural. They beam down a landing party. And here I have a question and a problem with this. So Captain Kirk is like, hey, this planet's weird. Spock is like, yes, we've run a bunch of scans. It's very strange. Something scientific is up. And Captain Kirk's like, well, great. I'll take Dr. McCoy. I'll take Sulu. Myself, of course, which makes no sense. He really should send Spock. And then he's like, and a geologist. And you think, well, the geologist is going to die.
Never heard of. Yes. Yeah.
He's dead. It makes perfect sense to bring a geologist, but you know that geologist is not long for this world. But I question why Captain Kirk should be on this landing party. I really don't think Captain Kirk should be on at all.
I agree with that as well. And I mean, it is this sort of manifest destiny. Like, of course, he needs to, it's something new and he needs to explore it, right?
Mm-hmm. And this is contrasting it with TNG, where Captain Picard almost never went on the landing party, and he always sent off Riker, who, of course, is the Kirk analog in TNG.
Absolutely. So. And I actually think they look so, like, watching this, I started to realize how physically similar Kirk and Riker are. I think they actually look quite a bit alike.
As you were saying that, it had never occurred to me, but I'm looking at a picture of Captain Kirk right now from this, or I suppose technically a picture of William Shatner from this episode. And yes, it is striking, and thinking how he holds himself and walks around in the episode, very Riker-ish, or I guess it is Kirk-ish, and Riker has been
emulating it. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. Fascinating, as Captain Spock would say. So yes, good old geologist D'Amato, who I thought probably going to be a woman because they're three dudes, but nope, there's another guy.
Of course not.
I thought maybe. Sometimes they have random scientists and they are ladies, and you're like, oh, look, it's a woman.
I think that would have made it much more interesting, but I think, which I'm sure you'll get to, I think the whole interplay between the antagonist of this entire episode, mm-hmm. being a beautiful woman and all of the victims being male is a real interesting dynamic.
Yes. And we'll talk about her because I feel like it's very strange.
Agreed.
And so they're going to beam down. They beam down. But before they beam down, or I guess as they're beaming down, this mysterious woman appears in the transporter room and she says, "Don't go." And nobody seems too surprised that a random woman has just appeared in the transporter room.
Right.
Which is my first kind of like, wouldn't you at least be startled? And then she kills the transporter guy, and they beam down. They can't stop. Obviously, they're mid-beam. And suddenly there's an earthquake, and the Enterprise is shaking, and the Enterprise is shot across 1,000 light years. And that leaves our intrepid foursome stranded on the planet where they need to figure out what's going on. So that's basically the episode. And they do figure it out. But the interesting thing is that they are this planet is clearly not natural. And they encounter this woman called, what is her name? Larissa? Lucira?
Lucira.
I can never get these names right. We don't find out her name until the very end of the episode. And she pops up. So basically, this story has two plot points, or two plot lines, I should say. There's the A story, which I guess is the planet. It's hard to tell which one is the A and the B plot. But there's the Enterprise trying to get back to the planet, and the away team on the planet trying to figure out what's going on and survive. Because they realize quickly that A, they're stranded, and B, they can't eat anything on this planet. And there's no water. You'd think they might bring some supplies with them, but I guess they did not because the Enterprises could just beam them up.
Yeah, they could just go right back.
And I do love how they scan and they realize, oh, the Enterprise is gone. And Sulu immediately says, well, it must have blown up. And nobody seems all that concerned either about that.
No. The whole thing, I mean, where do we start? Where do we start with how weird this episode is? Because I don't even know where to begin.
It's very strange.
Yeah. So they're on the planet and they're speculating. That's the thing. There's like a profound lack of concern about everything that's going on. Like you said, Lucira ends up on the ship and they're all like, oh, like, there's a woman they're like, okay, well, we're still and I get it. You can't do anything, but you would think that somebody would at least raise an eyebrow.
Yes.
Or once they landed on the planet, they would be like, oh my gosh. And frantically try and contact the Enterprise, but there's none of that.
Nope.
There's this just incredibly weird pacing. And then there's just like the captain and Spock, like, are being just, like, dicks to people who are reacting in ways that I think are reasonable. Like, at some point, Sulu is trying to speculate what the planet could be, and he mentions like a meteor hitting Siberia. Mm-hmm. And Kirk says to him, you know, if I wanted a Russian history lesson, I'd have brought Chekhov. Like, he's trying to figure out what's going on.
It's true. Well, ease up, Captain Kirk. Ease up.
Like, and also, like, you guys, like, your ship might be destroyed and you have no water. And you guys are just not, like, you are not at all, I think, appreciating the seriousness of your situation.
No.
And then Lee Merriweather shows up. Mm-hmm. Former Miss America, who we know well as Catwoman from the 1966 Adam West Batman film. Mm-hmm. She's wearing an amazing outfit.
She is. Her costume is, I would say, ridiculous, but it looks good on her because, frankly, anything I think would look good on her.
I mean, it's Lee Merriweather. Well, and there's something that we need to talk about her costume, which is it is crazy, and it's kind of this it's this two-piece midriff purple space. I mean, like, space. It's a 60s space costume.
It is.
Can't even describe it. It's mm-hmm. like Barbarella meets Rainbow Bright. And one of the things I love about it is there is a panel that comes up and like a square panel that covers her navel. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there staring at it and I realized that I Dream of Jeannie came out a couple years later, and one of the things that they demanded, the censors demanded, was that her navel be covered, because they said you can't show an exposed navel on network television. And so I'm pretty sure that that panel was distinctly designed to cover up Lee Merriweather's navel.
It's a navel panel.
And that completely distracted me from much of the episode.
It is, I will say, it's the weirdest part of the costume, that little patch that's just kind of hanging up there covering her navel.
Yeah, it's the whole thing is strange. So the
makeup,
ship is
though. I really like her whatever mascara or whatever the eye stuff is. It looks really cool.
It's amulet, so it's eyeshadow,
and
mascara is what goes on your eyelashes. But it is indicative of David Bowie's character from Labyrinth, I thought.
Oh yes.
So we've got the Enterprise, which is now basically 1,000 light years away.
Mm-hmm.
Although when someone notes that to Spock, he gets mad. He's like, it's 990. And you're like, you're just being pedantic.
Spock, just keep it together. We're all freaking out here, Spock.
And then we've got McCoy, who doesn't really do anything in this episode besides say every cell in his body has been exploded. We've got D'Amato, who dies pretty early. And we've got Sulu and the captain on the planet. And I mean, this plot arc is strange.
It's very strange. And I want to talk about every time, the first time that we see Lee Weatherwether, Lo Sierra, there you go. I can't even say that either. So listeners of this podcast, frequent listeners know that I cannot pronounce anything, so really, I should not have a podcast. She kills somebody, and then she appears again, and she's in engineering, because they are trying to get back to the planet, and Scotty says, all the instruments say everything's fine, but it just doesn't feel right to me.
Right.
So you, engineer, go check out this piece of equipment that's like 2 feet away from where we are.
Right.
Why he couldn't look himself, I don't know, but he's Scotty, so, you know, he'll tell somebody else to do it.
Right. Well, Scotty's good at delegating.
That's right. Unlike Geordi.
Right.
So he goes off to look at the some kind of valve or something. Doesn't really matter. And who appears but Lee Merriweather and this engineer. Now, let's say her costume clearly identifies her as someone who is not normally on the Enterprise. If this woman were someone on the Enterprise, everyone would know who she is.
Right.
She's clearly a stranger on the Enterprise. And the engineer is just like, who are you? What's going on? He doesn't get upset. He doesn't question her at all until the very end when she attacks him. It's very strange.
And the way that she attacks is interesting because she says she'll say the person's name. Like she says when she kills D'Amato, she says, I am here for you. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember if he's a Lieutenant D'Amato.
Yes.
And then she reaches for him and kills him. And then she, I believe, is Wyatt. I think Wyatt is her next victim. Mm-hmm. And she says, I am here for you. And I don't even think he has a rank.
He's like engineer fourth grade or something like that.
Yeah. And he has the presence of mind to shout for Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
And
says, there's a woman here who knows too much about the Enterprise or something like
right.
that. And then he does.
Yeah. But by then she's disappeared in this wonderful, you know, 60s effect that basically blips her mm-hmm. into a little hexagon or into a little rectangle that disappears.
Yes. And I will say, and when D'Amato meets her, because he does meet her first, you're right. So here's the setting. They are stranded on this planet. They don't know what's going on. They have seen, just as they were transporting down, some strange woman appear. And then they come down to this planet. They split up separately, which is a bad idea.
It's always a bad idea.
And so he's off looking at rocks because he's a geologist. And this woman appears. And he's like, she says, don't be afraid. And he says, I'm not afraid. I'm a geologist. It's like, well, okay. But you would think he might say, I should tell somebody that, we thought this was a lifeless planet, and now here's a woman in front of me. Maybe I should yell out. But no, he's like, let's chat. And she says, I'm here for you.
Because she's pretty, right?
She seduced them. And it is unclear how she knows so much about them. So he's,
it is. And I don't think that that is, so there's a lot that's never resolved. Mm-hmm. When we should get to that, but let's continue with this, and I'm using air quotes with my hands. Let's continue with the plot of this episode.
Yeah, so I guess, I think basically what you're saying, and I agree with you, is that these men are not reacting to her because they are dazzled by her beauty.
Yes.
Which I guess is, I mean, she is beautiful. I'm not going to say she's not, because she clearly is, but I just see, it seems like, they should be better at their jobs than that.
What an interesting episode to be watching right now, like, mm-hmm. in 2018, with everything that is going on. We are watching an episode where a woman is going around killing men who don't quite understand, like, who don't see her as a threat because she is pretty. I mean, it's just, yep. what a fascinating thing.
It's true.
Don't let her touch you,
because if she touches you, as Sulu finds out, because she's her next victim or attempted victim, is Sulu.
Yeah, and he trips, and so she doesn't get a good grip on him.
And Sulu, I give props to Sulu, because he is the only person in this episode who reacts the way you should, because she appears, and he basically says, "Who are you? Are there other people like you here? I really need to tell Captain Kirk." And so he yells for Captain Kirk. He says, he does kind of say, "Don't make me shoot a woman," or "I don't want to have to kill a woman."
Yes. Yes. And I wrote that down because I was like, that was one of those examples of it is still 1966 or whatever year. I think it is. Yeah. It's, or what year is it? It might be later than that, but it is still,
69.
It is still the 60s. In this episode, no matter what the star date is. and so he does react relatively normally. She attacks him, but doesn't get a good grip on him. And I think it's around this point where Captain Kirk appears, and she tries to touch him, and nothing happens to Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
Because Sulu was her intended victim. And what I think we're also seeing is a lot of agony on Lysira's face. Like, she seems to be morally conflicted,
yes.
about the harm that she is putting on people.
And this is when Captain Kirk does his traditional kind of interrogation of the enemy. And he's like, "Why are you trying to kill us? We're just peaceful visitors. Don't destroy us." And she's like, "I don't want to destroy you. I'm just defending our colony." And he's like, "Who are there more of you? Tell us more." And then she basically leaves because she doesn't want to answer his annoying questions. And it is clear, like you said, she has this look of conflict on her. Like, she doesn't want to kill people, but she must kill them.
Yeah. And then while all of this is happening, can you explain what's happening on the Enterprise? I mean, like, I had to read three episode summaries before I got it.
I think basically she has somehow, and I'm assuming they never say what happened, but I'm guessing that she must have fused this regulator so that the warp engine is now going out of control, and they're mm-hmm. going faster and faster. They can't stop it. And they have to, it's going to blow up in 15 minutes, or Spock is much more precise, like 14 minutes and 38 seconds or something like that. And they need to fix it or die. And Spock comes up with this zany idea to go into this service tube that apparently you normally don't use while the engines are on. And he says, "I'm going to do it." And Scotty says, "Well, I know the ship much better than you do, so I will do it." And Spock says, "All right." And Scotty says, "You know, we're going to die anyway, so I might as well try." And Spock says, "While you're doing that," because clearly Spock knew Scotty was going to volunteer to do it, "I'm going to run this very complicated program on the computer that shows our current state and compares it to a past known good state, and the computer will tell us what's going on." Scotty, of course, says that seems like a waste of time and we're all going to die, but okay. And into the tube he goes. And this is when, I did not find the tension that they were, I'm assuming, attempting to build by giving us a countdown clock and the Enterprise is going to blow up. I didn't feel any of this tension when Scotty was in that tube.
Scotty is going, no, there's no way Scotty is going to die. Sorry. Like, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, and he figures that Spock, you know, the computer says, Spock's like, hey, computer, tell me what you found. And the computer's like, this is very complicated. Give me a few more minutes. And Spock's like, okay. And so the computer gets a few more minutes. We get a few minutes of Scotty attempting to do something with colors beamed on his face. Everybody looking very tense. And then Spock, the computer says, oh, we were transported far away from this planet. And now we're slightly out of phase, so that has changed the polarity of this thing. It doesn't really matter. And so Spock's like, Scotty, change the polarity of your magnetic probe. And Scotty's like, that's crazy. And Spock says, just do it. I'll explain later. And then he proceeds to explain right then and there. And then this is what I assume the writers are like, oh boy, everybody's going to be on the edge of their seats. And now we're going to have Scotty not be able to change the polarity on his probe.
He can't get his screwdriver undone.
And people are at home are just going to be going crazy. And I will once again say, I felt no tension whatsoever.
At all. You guys, like, I do want you all to know, if you are at home and you are listening to this and you're thinking, gosh, this sounds confusing and it doesn't sound that interesting, I just want you to know, when you are watching the episode, it is also confusing and not that interesting. Like, this is a shockingly boring, weird episode of Star Trek.
Yes. And it is one of those episodes where I think this idea is not a bad idea.
Oh.
It's just weirdly told, and then you get all the kind of the weird 60s sexism, because I think at the last part of the show really highlights that, and it's just kind of weird. But long story short, Scotty and Spock save the Enterprise. Hooray, everybody's happy. And they get to the planet. And this is when, for some reason, I guess, you know, Lucira decides, I'm just done fighting. And opens the door to her secret base and just lets Captain Kirk, Sulu, and McCoy in. And so they go in. And this is after they have figured out that she can only target one person at a time, despite the fact that she has amazing powers to transport a ship thousands of light years away. She can only target one person at a time. Doesn't make any sense. And so they thwart her by, you know, she's going after Sulu. But McCoy and Kirk stand in front of Sulu, and she is completely flummoxed by this.
That is amazing that, like, she can't – she's like, oh, now I can't reach around you. Well, I give up. I can teleport.
Yeah, but I don't know how to get around you two.
I don't know what to do. I'm foiled again. And then they enter this cave, and now the problem is there are now three Lucira's, right?
And this is when Sulu says, our plan is not going to work.
Because she can now, there's one of them for each of us.
Mm-hmm.
And for the record, we still don't know her motivation.
We don't. And this is what, I think this is the point at which Captain Kirk is like, are you lonely?
And it also, by the way, if you'd watch this episode, this feels like it's happening around hour four. This episode.
It's true.
Like, you're like, what? When is this going to end?
It takes a long time to get to this weird cave with a giant multicolored cube affixed to the ceiling that everybody very quickly figures out as a computer. I have no idea how they figure out that's a computer because it looks nothing like a computer.
Maybe in 1969, that's what future computers looked like.
I just thought it was like a lamp, like a lava lamp or something. But everyone's like, nope, it's a computer.
Yep, we gotta shoot it.
So yeah, she cannot still, despite the fact that there are three of her and three of them, she can't seal the deal and kill them all. But luckily, I guess she's about to approach them. And Spock beams down with some random security officer. And Kirk says, Spock, destroy the computer. And this is when I would say, where's the computer?
Right. Like, do you mean the glowing cube hanging from the ceiling that looks like a fancy square disco ball?
Is that the computer? Because I'm pretty sure it's not a computer. But the security guard that's with them is apparently an expert on extraterrestrial computers, because he knows exactly what Captain Kirk means, even though Captain Kirk doesn't even point at it, and shoots it and destroys it, and away go the projections or whatever these things are of Lucira. She goes away, and this is when Captain Kirk and Spock have a little chat about, you know, what took you so long, and ha ha ha. And Spock is like, oh, this must be a very advanced culture. And I don't know what he bases that on. And everybody's dead, apparently. But then we get a message from past Lucira. She left like a little video, a YouTube video for everybody.
Right. And I could be totally off here, but what she says is, we are the Caladans.
Mm-hmm.
And we have created this planet. I could be completely wrong, so please correct me here. We have created this planet, but a disease has ravaged it.
Yeah, well, they created this disease,
which killed everyone.
Yep.
And so now they have, and she is the last survivor, and she is awaiting reserves and food and supplies that will never arrive, which is actually kind of reminiscent of the last Star Trek, like the last recent Star Trek film to have come out. Like, there was something about that reminded me of, you know, someone being stranded, waiting for supplies, waiting for rescue, and never having it come.
Mm-hmm.
But it never comes. And so she puts up an auto protection on the planet.
Yes, that right? will attack anyone who is not a Caledonian. Caledonian, whatever they are.
Caledonian. So, like, I guess the first question is, why?
Yes.
Because so everyone's dead.
Well, she doesn't know everybody. So everyone on the planet is dead. She doesn't know everyone on her species is dead. Captain McCoy figures. Assumes everybody else is dead.
But she does know that, like, eventually, like, she's probably going to die out. So why would you try protecting, like, a planet? Like, why wouldn't you? Right? And what if somebody else was coming by who just, like, that's the part that made no sense to me. And then somehow, over the, like, 1,000 years, this protection system starts to emulate Lucira because that's all they all it has. Mm-hmm. So it goes like rogue AI, and it starts to feel guilt for the killing because Lucira was such a kind and benevolent person.
Yes.
What? So, like, what? Like, why? Why would you set up? Why would you protect a planet, first of all, that no one is on? Like, that's the part that didn't get me.
The way I can explain that, I think, is that so this is an outpost. They don't really explain why they created it, but I assume it's some important thing for her species. And so she's assuming that even though all of them will die, eventually more ships will arrive and other people will take over the outpost. So they need to protect it so that, you know, meddlesome humans or whoever don't just take their sweet outpost. That's just kind of floating away.
I mean, that is some great backstory. That would have been helpful. That is useful. Okay.
That's what we call headcanon. That's what I've decided is makes the most sense. The computer apparently thinks the only way I could defend this is by creating an image of the last known survivor and then letting them giving that image the power to corrupt people's chromosomes.
Is pretty wild. And the fact that, like, that's some incredibly powerful AI that it can get onto the Enterprise and move it 1,000 light years. And it also never addresses how the AI knows who, like, did. It's almost like it hacked the Enterprise and therefore was able to identify who the different people were.
Yeah, that's what I assume happened.
Right.
Because that's the only thing that makes, and here are some air quotes, makes sense.
Right.
and so this thing is so powerful. We've seen it do so many powerful things. And yet it chooses, like, the most inefficient way to kill and defend itself, like, one by one. What if there
touching
were, like,
on the
50
shoulder.
People? Then you'd be screwed.
Right, or you'd have 50 Lucira's.
I guess. that are easily confused when you stand behind something else.
Right. Well, and the reason that they are really able to distract Lysira is that she feels emotional complications about killing people, which is a result of the AI borrowing from the real Lysira. And right. none, like, I'm just like, what?
The AI is what Captain Kirk says something about. It's too good because it has taken her feelings as well and emulated them. So she's not a cold-blooded killer. She is just a regular lady killer.
And they are, and I think that they are also attributing, like, I mean, the way that they have confused this episode conflates beauty and goodness is mm-hmm. kind of incredible. But they also really, they're all just kind of reflecting at the end of the episode on what an amazing human she, or what an amazing person she must have been, that she was, because like, it was her moral fortitude that confused the AI, and that's why they are still alive.
It's very strange. And then that's when we get the point where someone says, oh, gee, she's very pretty. And Spock says, you know, beauty is transient, but she must have been clearly very intelligent because she was the leader and stuff. And I thought, well, that's a good message to end with. Let's end with that message. Right. But we don't end with that message because Captain Kirk says, you know what, Spock, I disagree. I think beauty survives. And I don't even know what that means.
Oh.
And the title of the episode is That Which Survives. And so now we know that which survives is beauty. But does he mean like metaphysical beauty? Does he mean, I'm pretty sure Captain Kirk does not. So he means physical beauty, but I don't understand.
No. What a weird episode. Like, I was angry while watching it. I was just annoyed. And I'm still profoundly frustrated. And I still don't get how she got on the ship. And here's the other part. She's trying to stop them from getting onto the planet. So her presence on the ship where she initially says, no, don't, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, why are you killing people on the Enterprise? Like, why wouldn't your avatar, your Lysira avatar on the Enterprise say, hey, you need to get those guys off the planet immediately or I'm going to kill them and you all need to leave. Like, it seems like you would want to expedite their removal from the planet
yes.
rather than sending their ship. Yeah. So anyway.
And at least just say, hey, leave the planet instead
yes.
of, because she went to all the trouble before they were beaming down to say, no, don't beam down. And then once
right.
they beam down, she's like, well, I guess you've screwed it all up. So I'm going to shoot your ship far away and kill you one by one because that's only logical. And Spock does
right.
say she seems very logical, although to me her course of action seems completely illogical if her goal was to not have people be on the planet.
And this is, I mean, I guess this is how AI is going to destroy us by just really confusing the hell out of us.
Yeah, we'll be like, a machine learning is like, I don't understand why you're doing this to me, cash register.
So, yeah. So I'm glad that you also found this episode to be incredibly weird.
It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But I will say I like the idea of this, you know, the story of the imagining this woman who's the lone survivor of a race, clearly dying of starvation on this outpost, manning her station and trying to protect it and, you know, keeping it up and running for future people who never come. That's a very kind of powerful story and very sad. This episode is not, if you told me that was basically the plot of this episode, which it is, I would never imagine stuff that happens in this episode
no.
being part
and
of that story.
And it is such a powerful message. And it's one that we do see in the lone survivor, this kind of, you know, this kind of Robinson Crusoe sort mm-hmm. of stranded survivor is something that we see a lot, I think, in science fiction. I think it was there was even a part in, oh gosh, I'm completely going to get it wrong. I always get which one is Serenity and which one is Firefly mixed up. But the film version of it, there's a point where, you know, they're talking about the origin of the Reavers, and there's one woman survivor, and she's recording a video talking about how, you know, how they came about and discussing it. And so I think that that whole, I am the lone survivor and I am recording a video to the future, explaining, providing backstory, like that's such a powerful, it's such a powerful message. And I think we see it a lot. So that was kind of cool. It is cool to see the foundation of future, not just Star Trek stories, but future sci-fi stories laid out in this episode. I thought that was neat.
Yes.
I might be giving it too much credit.
I think maybe a little bit, but it is the foundational story of the episode. And yes. I will say, as many third season original series episodes, this one probably is worth skipping.
Agreed.
Unless you really like Lee Merriweather, I guess, which I don't know why you wouldn't, but you could see many other things that she was in that are better than this episode of Star Trek if you are a big fan of hers. So
I think that's true. I will say one thing that is fun about this episode is if you are a big Spock fan, he gets tons of screen time. And it is, I will say, it is quite heavy-handed. It almost feels like they are writing a parody of Spock.
Like when the moment they all get shook up and he falls down and hits his head on the captain's chair, and Uhura turns to him and says, "What happened, Spock?" And he says, "Oh, I hit my head on the chair." And she's like, "Oh, Spock."
Right. And it's like I can't even remember what he says. My cranium made contact with me, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, Spock, you're wasting time. Like, this is actually an illogical course of action that you're taking. But there is one part which I found absolutely delightful. And it was just like a real subtle take, which is, as you're watching, he's on the bridge and he's talking to someone, but he just kind of like bats his arm and kind of swivels the captain's chair as he's standing, and it kind of spins around. And I just, it was, for some reason, that was so delightful to me. Because you just saw a bit of Leonard Nimoy coming out there, like, I'm going to play with the captain's chair while I'm up here. So I thought that was great. And what, there was something else that I noticed about this episode too, which was how noisy they assume technology is. Have you noticed that, like, on the bridge, it's like, and all these sounds in the background, which I kind of found both annoying and delightful.
And I wonder, now we know that lots of today's technology is the product of people who were Star Trek fans and probably still are. So we have many things that are kind of, you know, echoes of what the past thought the future would be. And now the future is what the past kind of thought it would be, which is interesting to me. But I wonder if that idea that technology makes beeps has led to the default in our smartphones and tablets of having, you know, whenever you use the keyboard, it makes noise unless you turn it off, which I immediately do. Because it's super annoying, but I know some people like it. I wonder if that is influenced at all. Probably not, but it's an interesting thought.
It is. Well, and I'm in Seattle. We have the Sci-Fi Museum up here, and they actually had the entire bridge from the original Star Trek series set up, and they had the costumes from a bunch of different series, but they had the costumes from the original series as well. And I was walking around the bridge. And what's amazing is like what they thought a spaceship console would look like. And it's just like button, like it's a couple little buttons and a couple little knobs, and then just lights that are constantly blinking. And so I'm watching it in the background, and I'm like, none of that stuff, that doesn't do anything. And it's like, well, of course it doesn't. They're also not really on a planet. So
I know, but there's that weird moment where, and I think this speaks to the power of storytelling in general, that you are so sucked into it that on one level you're like, oh, well, they're on a spaceship. And then you think, well, wait a second. Those controls don't look right. And then you think, oh, wait, they're not actually on a spaceship, so it's okay.
And I will say, even watching this on a large screen, the makeup and the attachment of Spock's ears, totally flawless, like completely amazing.
Yes.
Those look like his real ears. So there are some things in this episode to really enjoy, but not much. And you're right, you can totally skip it. It's not really canonical. It doesn't extend or continue any other stories.
Yeah, it's completely standalone. So it's not worth watching, really, unless you're a completist or you were assigned it randomly by the universe because you were coming on my podcast. So I thank you, Jarlene, for watching it and discussing it with me.
Oh, well, it was delightful. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, hopefully the next episode will be more interesting.